Now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is success. Each of my guests is discussing success in one form or another. My next guest is a financial reporter and anchor at CNBC. He recently moved to CNBC from Fox Business News. We're going to discuss today's business headlines and have him help set us straight on what's going on in the world of finance. And if you have questions or if you want to speak to my guest, you can always call us at 639-0008. Brian Sullivan joined CNBC in May of this year. Brian has more than 15 years of financial broadcasting experience, having served as the anchor at Fox Business Network. Prior to that, he was a producer and a reporter and an anchor at Bloomberg Television as well. He's recognized as one of the first financial journalists to highlight the risks of the housing bubble. His 2007 special, Subprime Shockwaves, won the New York CPA Society's Excellence in Financial Journalism Award, and he was nominated for the prestigious Loeb Award. Prior to joining Bloomberg in 1997, Brian traded chemical commodities for Mitsubishi International. Brian has a BA in political science from Virginia Tech and a law degree from Brooklyn Law College, and he's an avid auto racer. Welcome to the show, Brian. How are you today?
It is a real pleasure. How are things out there in Southern California?
Things are beautiful today. In fact, it is a gorgeous sunny day. It is truly a delight to be here in Southern California. So let's jump right into it, because I love having thought leaders like yourself on the show, Brian, who really have their finger on the pulse of what's going on in the business world. And today the story is Greece. I mean, Greece is definitely the word. The Parliament narrowly passed the austerity measures that they need to receive the next tranche of bailout money offered by the ECB. The vote, I found interestingly enough, was passed along party lines. So there's several more hurdles that the Greeks have to pass in order to receive the money, but it seems pretty likely they're going to get it. Now, we're witnessing financial history right now being made, but what's the story here, Brian? I mean, have the Greek politicians done anything to make Greece more solvent, or are they just kicking the can down the road?
I think it's probably the latter, Billy. I mean, listen, I was privileged to be able to go over to Greece last year when the rioting sort of first broke out, spent some days in the ground there, then flew to Belgium and Spain and sort of traced some of the concerns around Europe. You know, the reality is that the problems are likely not going to be fixed by this. I mean, the austerity plan is pretty tough. I mean, basically, it cuts government worker pay by 10% immediately, and one out of every four Greeks works for the government. So your next check will be 10% less. They also lowered the minimum tax. If you made below 12,000 euros a year, you were untaxed on anything below that. Now it's 8,000, so they're getting more people to pay more taxes. But the Greeks, notorious tax evaders, if people decide they can hide the money. I mean, when I was there, the restaurants, everybody was asking to be paid in cash. Obviously, they didn't feel like having their credit card receipts traced for tax reasons. The debt burdens of Greece are simply likely too high. I think, and I have written this and I've said this, that I believe even with this that they will eventually end up defaulting regardless.
Well, that brings up some interesting points. First of all, it's a socialistic government over there. So can a socialistic government do anything to really generate more jobs and more business in a country like Greece?
Well, they haven't so far. I mean, like I said, one of every four Greeks works for the government.
Yeah.
The unemployment rate among the young there is, by some accounts, as high as 40% if you're, directly out of college. Those are the people that are in Syntagma Square throwing rocks and Molotov cocktails, because their prospects for jobs are nearly nil. You know, you have a college degree and you can't get, even in some cases, a menial position because the pensioners and the unions at the top have largely locked up those jobs. I mean, if you are a public employee in Greece, you can retire at the age of 50 in some situations with a multi-thousand euro a month pension.
Wow.
Now, that sounds pretty good, because I'm getting up there in age, too, so I'm thinking, hey, maybe I should move there and get a government job.
Yeah, maybe, but you're still a young man, a lot of life ahead of you. I wouldn't be too worried to rush over to Greece right now. But it brings up an interesting point. You say that you think they're on the path to default. What happens if a Eurozone member defaults? We don't know. It's unproven at this point. But what is your speculation if Greece goes down? What does that mean for the Eurozone?
My speculation is that it'd probably be a good thing. I mean, default is not... We treat it like it's, in some cases, I mean, we sort of the national dialogue here, because it's so foreign to us in America, at least right now,
yeah,
that default is the end of the world, right? The reality is that many countries, I mean, we forget that Iceland defaulted last year. They basically told the bondholders to go shove it. And Iceland now has come back to market being able to sell debt at a reasonable interest rate of just 5%.
Hmm.
Argentina defaulted a few times in the 90s. Russia defaulted in 1998. And now, of course, they're being thrown in with China and Brazil and India as one of these sort of, you know, fast-growing emerging economies.
Right.
You know, history says that stock markets tend to rally dramatically when a country defaults. In fact, Indonesia, South Korea, Russia, and I'm probably leaving one out, Argentina, when they all defaulted in the mid to late 90s and 2001, their stock markets doubled at the minimum within a 12-month period.
All
because
true.
Now you're not, instead of paying all the interest, you're able to actually use government money to help create jobs through loans for small business, large infrastructure projects, you name it.
All true, but there's a difference now. When Argentina defaulted so many years ago, they weren't part of a bloc like the Eurozone today.
That's the risk, is the currency risk, because they all devalued their own currencies and were able to gain, you know, and of course the returns I gave you were in local currency terms. So you're right on point, Billy, is that it is a common currency, and B, one that they cannot, Greece by itself, devalue.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be
so
tough.
We don't know what's going to happen. The banks, though, I'm not saying there wouldn't be an impact, but the banks in Germany and France that hold most of this debt, they have had, this is not a surprise, right? This is not Lehman that developed in the course of a couple of months and all of a sudden rolled over rapidly. They've had a year and a half to 2 years to get their books in order.
Mm-hmm.
If they're not ready, they probably deserve to fail.
Well, it's an interesting point. You mentioned the European banks, because the European banks have stepped up, and kudos to them for doing this. But right now they're talking about rolling over the paper and shifting it amongst the banks. And it just reminded me when I heard the report this morning, it sounded like musical chairs when we were little. You know, you didn't want to be the last one standing when the music stopped. And I'm afraid that's what's going to happen with this paper that gets passed around from the French banks to the German banks, back to the French banks and so forth. The last one standing is going to get stuck with the tab. Any thoughts on that?
They will, but there's things you can do, too. I mean, you can hedge your bets. You can buy swaps on the credit default swap market. You can try to, you know, get more capital from other sources in that 2 years to mitigate the impact. I mean, ratings firm Fitch, whatever you think of the rating agencies, but ratings firm Fitch has said basically that you're looking at, you know, 2 to 5, maybe 6% of total equity at most in Greek debt held on these banks' books. So, you know, so let's say 4% of their equity is then wiped out.
Yeah.
You know, if you're Deutsche Bank or Societe Generale in Paris, you need to be able to deal with that. The issue, of course, like housing, so many years ago now, I guess it seems like, is the leverage. How much other leverage is built on top of that? We don't know, and the unknown is what is scary.
That it is. My guest is Brian Sullivan from CNBC, and we're batting around the current business news of the day. And most of my listeners, when you said credit default swaps, I mean, their minds just switched off. So let's move it back out for just a minute, Brian, and take a look at the bigger picture, because I think the bigger picture is very telling here. You know, if you get away from the violence and everything else that's going on in Greece right now, Greece has basically voted to accept austerity measures. Great Britain, under their new Prime Minister David Cameron, has voted for austerity measures. Is this the beginning of a worldwide trend towards less government spending and more austerity?
Well, it's going to have to be. If at the minimum, at least in the developed nations like Europe and the United States, if only, Billy, for demographics. I mean, you know, if you're in India or China where you've got a huge younger population, you know, many of the Arab nations are very young. Egypt, right? 40% of the population's under 25, so they're hungry to work. They're, you know, they're going to work. They're aggressive. When you've got a demographic shift where more people are retiring every year and thus draining what they've put in, and sometimes, and a lot of times, more than they've put in, the burden thus increases on the people who are still paying in, so you get sort of this downward spiral driven by demographics. And that's really what we're going to be seeing in a lot of the European nations. I mean, Italy has basically, nearly a negative birth rate.
Right.
Right. The United States isn't much closer. You know, I mean, the average family now is having fewer children than they did a few generations ago. And when you look at 330 or whatever it is, people who turn 60 every hour in the United States now, you can see where the financial burden is going to grow.
Right.
How do we pay for that? That's the question. I don't know.
Well, that is the bigger question, so I'm going to throw it back to you. You know, what lessons can the United States government be learning from what's going on right now in Greece and in the rest of the world?
Solve your problems now. I mean, everybody's talking about the sort of the bravery of the, you know, Greek politicians for going against the rioting masses, and they made the right call. You know what? Where were they 10, 20 years ago when anybody in the developed world could see this coming, right? When you it's no secret to look at just what are my obligations and what is my income. Every one of your listeners does that when they sit down at the family dining room table and goes through their budget. I mean, this is not, we talk about, yeah, credit default swaps and all these complicated terms. At the end of the day, it's literally how much are we taking in and how much are we paying out? And how much are we going to be paying out in 5 years, right? This is what happened with the mortgage market. People took out three-year ARMs, and they said, well, I can pay $2,000 a month in my mortgage, right? Oh, yes, in 5 years, I'll have to pay $4,000 a month, but I'm not worried about 5 years from now. I'll figure it out. Well, we know that a lot of people, unfortunately, couldn't figure it out or didn't figure it out or didn't think about it until a month before their ARM rolled over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very true. But let me throw it back and push back on this a little bit with you, Brian, because here in the United States, we had the governor of Wisconsin push back. He took some charge and said, okay, we're going to solve this problem now rather than later. And yet he is demonized for taking those bold steps, and he's being held up as really the effigy of what's wrong with capitalism and what's wrong with Tea Party and taking responsibilities. What do you say to that? I mean, our own House of Representatives is going to wait until the 11th hour with a debt ceiling before they act on anything, and we're playing a giant game of chicken with our national credit rating.
You know, I'll get to your first point second on the debt ceiling. I'm not as worried about it. I'll tell you why. The debt ceiling is an artificial debate because Congress has already appropriated the money. So now it's just up to the Treasury whether or not they can spend it. So Congress has already said we're going to spend more than that. So Congress appropriated more than our debt ceiling already. So, you know, if the markets were concerned about a debt default, they would have done it when Congress appropriated the money.
Okay.
So it's sort of a little bit of an artificial debate. Now back to your previous point. The easiest thing for any politician of either party to do is to give, right? You don't get elected by taking away. And so what we're seeing now is after years of giving, after years of income increases across many of the public sector workplaces, where if you look at sort of income gains for public sector versus private sector, there's no contest. Most public sector workers have enjoyed income and total comp, including pension, healthcare, whatever, gains at an exponentially greater rate than the private sector. So now you got guys like Walker that come in and say, okay, we're going to have to pull back on some of these. And people scream. But when you actually do the numbers and you say, well, you need to contribute a few percent more to your pension or your healthcare, people say, you can't take that away from me, I earned it. Well, if they look back, even with the cuts in a lot of cases, the numbers are still higher than they were just 5 years ago because of these sort of guaranteed increases that a lot of you, and of course, it's very different across the country in different unions, different places. And I'm not just picking on the unions, but it's, you see what I'm saying? It's like, if I made $10,000 a year 5 years ago and I make $20,000 a year now, and they say you need to, you know, we're going to cut your income by 5%, and I'm screaming because now, you know, I've got $1,000 less than I had. I still got $9 more than I did.
True, but you're cutting through the rhetoric of that and getting away from the politics. You haven't taken into account inflation, and inflation is eating away at this rather rapidly too. Whether you believe the government or not that we're having inflation, that's another story. But over 5 years, there has been some inflation. So even the money that you had 5 years ago, you're better off, but it is eating away. It is eaten away by inflation. My guest is Brian Sullivan of CNBC. What do you say to that, Brian?
Well, partly, listen, inflation is certainly heating up now. The last few years, we've had some deflation. I mean, debt service levels have come down, in part for a lot of reasons. You know, I hear your point, but if you look at the income gains over even, say, massive inflation, which we didn't really have, but certainly a lot of things went up in cost, you're still going to get more, especially because of the benefits on the back end, right? The total compensation packages, right? I mean, if you look at it, and of course, New York, right here in New York, and, you know, sort of a hotbed of this as well, and New Jersey just, you know, had a sweeping pension reform. You know, you read so much about people who, you know, their compensation is $90,000 a year, but their total package is like $150,000, right? So you're thinking, wow, what's the $60,000? Well, that's, you know, health benefits and all these other things. So I doubt there's many of your listeners who would agree that they would rather have a public sector healthcare plan than whatever one they've got now.
Mm. Good point. Very true. We're talking to Brian Sullivan of CNBC. Sorry, Brian, train of thought. I'm going to change subjects on you because we're running out of time. What I like that you're bringing to CNBC is a completely different style. And you walk onto the set. In some cases, I've seen you jacket off with your shirt sleeves or rolled up. I like that let's get down to business look. I like your tenacious style of reporting. That's good. So kind of characterize for me your style of reporting financial news. And tell me what works for you and what doesn't work for you when it comes to this tenacious style.
You know, I'm not really sure, you know, what I do. I mean, I can say this is that I really enjoy what I do, and I believe that every story that we do is the most important story to somebody, right? It may not seem important overall, but I try to treat every piece of news as if it's the single most important story to somebody watching, because it probably is. No matter how obscure, there's probably one person who says, oh, yeah, here's my story.
Mm-hmm.
And I really do feel a lot of curiosity and passion about this stuff because there's very few things that, like, I grew up in California, Billy, and then I moved to Virginia because my family lost everything.
Wow.
You know, we basically went bust, and we packed up when I was 14 with our family's tail between our legs, and we moved to Virginia essentially to start over. And I went through the hard times, you know, and I'm lucky my parents got out of it and we fought through it. What we're talking about now, I think, is so important, you know, about job creation, about deficits, about the impact of debt. I mean, I watched what the impact of debt did to my actual family as a teenager.
Mm.
So we know what the impact of debt is on a national scale. I think what we're doing now is so important. All I try to do every day is remind myself how lucky I am to be in the position I am, and that I need to try to bring some of the sensibility that I had. Yeah, my life is pretty good now, right? I've busted my butt. You know, my wife and I both make good incomes, you know, but I'm always nervous because of what happened to us growing up. So I'm probably a little too financially conservative on my own balance sheet. My wife's like, we need a new roof. I'm like, just patch it, you know, we'll save the money. But I try to bring that sort of grounding of, hey, these are really hard times for a lot of people. But we need to remember that we've been through hard times before, and not to be a Pollyanna, but at the end of the day, stocks are always the best investment. Over the last 100 years, there's no major asset class that compares.
Without
I know the last 10 years have been dismal, but if you're young enough, I really believe that that's where you're going to make your wealth. It's not in gold. It's not in real estate, as we've learned the hard way. It's not in bonds. Stocks and American business and jobs and corporations, that's what we do. And so I try to bring that sort of energy level every day to the show. I wish they'd get rid of the ties. I'd rather just wear a T-shirt.
Nah, the ties anchor
I'm
the whole thing.
I'm sitting here in my suit in Vans, if you know what Vans slip-ons
yes, of
are.
Course.
Those are my California remnants sitting here in Vans and my suit.
Well, you do bring a high energy level to business. I love what you have to say about stocks being the best in the long term. I completely agree with you. Unfortunately, Brian, we're out of time. My guest has been Brian Sullivan of CNBC. Brian, you are a breath of fresh air. If people want to learn more about you, learn more about what you do, where would you direct them to go on the internet?
I got a little brief blog on, or a brief bio on CNBC.com. I have a personal website, which I'm rejiggering because of my car racing. I raced go-karts in Adams go-kart track in Riverside as a kid. I've been racing my whole life. So my website will be going up pretty soon. Just Google my name. It'll pop up. But, you know, real pleasure to be on with you, Billy. And, hey, go Angels. Can I say that in Dodger country?
You can
go
say it only because Angels. We broadcast the Angels on this network. We are National League here.
You know that.
Yeah.
Awesome. Go Halos.
Okay. Good enough. My guest has been Brian Sullivan. Brian, thank you so much. You've been a very special guest. We'll talk to you down the road.
All right. Take care.
Take care.